I'm Cecilia Lay, and this is Fifth in Mission. This past weekend brought to a close a two-decade American era in Afghanistan. On Sunday, the Taliban took back control of the country with little resistance, and the collapse of the U.S.-backed government has sent panic through thousands of civilians. Some have tried desperately to escape. Others are in hiding, afraid of what future they will face next. Here in the Bay Area, as the scenes of panic and chaos in Afghanistan unfold, we reflect on the trillions of dollars that the U.S. has invested, as well as the thousands of American service members who have died, in what came to be seen as a forever war. It was a war that was spurred in 2001, just days after the 9/11 attacks, when the United States Congress voted on a resolution that authorized the use of military force. There was only one person in Congress who voted against it, Oakland's very own Representative Barbara Lee. At the time, her unpopular opinion faced tremendous backlash. She urged her colleagues to, quote, be careful not to embark on an open-ended war with neither an exit strategy nor a focused target. Today, we take a deeper look at that woman whose words 20 years ago are ringing especially true now. We're featuring an episode of the Chronicle podcast, It's All Political with Joe Garofoli, where Joe interviews Lee about that famous vote and what's happened in the two decades since. You'll also get the rare opportunity to hear her speak candidly about her personal life, including her experiences with being in an abusive relationship and surviving as a single mom on food stamps. All of that is covered in a new documentary film about her, Barbara Lee, Speaking Truth to Power. Joe also interviews that film's director, Abby Ginsberg, on another episode of It's All Political, and that's live now, and you can find it wherever you listen to Fifth in Mission. Here's It's All Political with Joe Garofoli and Representative Barbara Lee.
Welcome to It's All Political, the San Francisco Chronicle's political podcast. I'm Joe Garofoli, the Chronicle's senior political writer, and today our guest is Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Now, we've had the Congresswoman on a number of times before, but today's appearance will be different. She will talk about a lot of personal things, and unlike many legislators, Barbara Lee does not like to talk about her personal life too much. Part of the reason is because much of it has been a very, very painful journey. But there's a new documentary coming out on Friday, August 20th, about Lee called Barbara Lee, Speaking Truth to Power, and it fuses some aspects of Lee's personal life, including an abusive relationship and being on public assistance as a young single mother, and shows how those experiences and others have shaped her long career as a legislator. On Tuesday, we will be talking with the documentary's director, Abby Ginsberg, about how the film came together, and she will be sharing some behind-the-scenes material that is really great. But now, here is our conversation with my congressional representative, Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Congresswoman Barbara Lee, from your parked car in Oakland, safely parked, to my home in Oakland, welcome back to It's All Political. I am always happy to have my member of Congress on the podcast, but I thought, you know, now that you're a big-time movie star with your own documentary out, you might big-time us here.
Please, talk to Abby about that. I'm not a movie star, first of all, and I was an unwilling subject for this documentary that a great filmmaker put together and who was persistent and insisted that I do this. But
that is my first question. I know you were very reluctant to do this. You're out there on many issues, as we've talked about over the years. But you're a very private person. You're very old school and type of legislator in that way. You're not sharing what you had for breakfast on Instagram. What was your initial hesitation in doing this?
Well, my initial hesitation was that, first of all, I am a public official and I'm doing my work on behalf of my constituents, and I don't need to be the subject of the documentary. It's kind of like I'm trying to, quote, save the world and do right by people and try to create a world that's more equitable and more just. So that's one of the reasons I was very hesitant, and it took Abby twice as long to do this film. Secondly, I am a very private person, and you know, as a public official, 98% of your life is public, but that 2% I really guard. That zone of privacy is very important to me. Otherwise, I don't know how I could do my public work without having that private part and personal part of my life. And so I knew that Abby would try as a filmmaker to dig a little deeper than what I wanted to go. But she was very respectful and honored those sort of parameters, even though she forced me to have to share a bit of my personal story to make sense for the film to make sense as it relates to my public life.
And honestly, Congresswoman, there are two big reasons I really enjoyed the film. And that was one of them, was that I learned some things about Barbara Lee, the person, that I didn't know before. In fact, I was talking to Amy Allison, who we both know, president of She the People, an Oaklander. And she said she learned things about you that she didn't know. And she's known you for a couple of decades. And one thing you talked about was that you were involved in an abusive relationship as a young woman. I imagine that's something I don't think I've ever heard you talk about publicly. And how did that, you know, form how you became as a legislator?
Yeah, and I won't say unfortunately or fortunately, Abby picked up on that. I did write about it in my book. And when I was and it was a terrible relationship. It wasn't a marriage. It was a relationship. Well, ended up later in a marriage, but not the father of my children. But it was awful. And once I escaped from that, and it was really bad. I understand what battered women syndrome is. I understand what takes place between two people that causes the batterer to continue battering and for the person, male or female, to remain in a relationship, even though they're getting battered and it's a violent relationship. Finally, when I was able to muster everything I had to leave that relationship, I never looked back. And when I was elected to the legislature, it was ironic because I never looked back, I didn't understand or know why I was so adamant about all these bills I've introduced. And Pete Wilson, a Republican governor, signed probably about 8 or 9 of my bills into law on domestic violence. And then when the feds passed the Violence Against Women Act, you know, the state had to create and pass their own. So I actually authored the California Violence Against Women's Act, right? Women Act. And when I look back now, and I guess the film helped me put all that together, it was like by probably being motivated to do this without even realizing the personal experiences that I had that came into play as to why I insisted that issues around violence on all fronts, but especially against women in domestic violent relationships, why that was such a big issue for myself. And it was, and it still is a big issue.
And it was something, but you did not talk about it, that your personal experience publicly at that point. It was many years later.
Yeah, barely talk about it now. Abby made me talk about it. I didn't even talk about being on public assistance until Lynn Woolsey, and it's in the film, how she made me start talking about, you know, these things are so deeply personal. And there are other issues that talk about abortion, you know. You talk about other issues that all women that I know, a lot of women that I know, especially women of color and Black women, have had to struggle with all of their lives. I'm no exception to that. And I felt like, and still feel like, well, I'm going to do everything I can do so women don't have to go through what I went through. But I hate talking about this personally, really.
Yeah, no. Why is that? Do you think that's a generational thing or what is that? Because, you know, the younger generation of legislators talks about that all the time. As you said in the film, this is explored where you until fairly recently, you didn't talk about being on food stamps because you're a young mom, young single mom. Why is that difficult for you to share?
It's difficult because it's so personal. And again, and I always say I'm a cancer, right? Cancers are very private people. And that 2% zone of privacy, this falls within my private life. No, it's nobody's, in my mind, it's nobody's business, right? But again, going to Abby, it's like, well, the work you do, you're motivated in many ways by your experiences, your life experiences. It just happens my life experiences have been a little unique for a lot of public officials. You know, you don't have too many Black women of my generation elected to Congress who've had the experiences that I've had. Yeah, you know, because it's not like I just started as a professional elected official. I mean, I came to this through many life experiences that a lot of people may have and haven't talked about it or just didn't have.
What was it like to see that up on the screen?
Well, it's like, here we go again. When I wrote my book, the editors and the publisher insisted that I be authentic because they couldn't figure out why I was writing about reproductive rights so much, right? Because I remember the days of back alley abortions. I had to go to Mexico, and I did. And that's not in the film, but, I know that issue very well.
So that was an experience you had. You went to Mexico to have an abortion?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That wasn't in the film.
I was a teenager.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't in the film. I don't even know if I talked to, I'm telling you, but I didn't talk about it in film.
We'll break some news here.
Yeah. I've talked about it publicly. It was Amy Allison on one of the She the People events where I talked about it because it was about reproductive justice, reproductive rights that Black women, women of color, low-income women should have access to the same constitutional rights of making their own personal decisions about reproductive freedom. Well, that's now, even in the day, Roe versus Wade hadn't even been passed or has not been put into the Constitution. It wasn't a constitutional requirement. And so I know those experiences, right? And
How old were you?
Then? Oh, God. 15, 16, I don't know.
Okay, so this is well before Roe.
But the experience of having not having access, not knowing what to do, not being unmarried, it's a terrible thing to have to go through. It's a horrible thing. And women go through these decisions, they're gut-wrenching, they're heart-wrenching. And so I'm going to use my life experiences to fight for reproductive rights for everyone, including women of color, low-income women. That's why I worked so hard this year and have been for the last umpteen years to get the Hyde Amendment taken out of legislation, which denies access to the full range of reproductive freedom for women who don't have money or low-income women of color. Okay, so I'm just sharing this with you because it's an example of why I have to use, I think, my personal experiences to help change the system so that other women and that other people of color, other African Americans, don't have to go through so much that myself and others have gone through in this country.
We'll be back with more of my interview with Congresswoman Barbara Lee. But before we take a short break, I want to let you know that the Chronicle has a deal going. You can get 26 weeks of full digital access for 99 cents total. That's less than a buck. It renews at $3.99 a week, and you can cancel at any time. It's a short-term offer, so do it now. 26 weeks for 99 cents. It's the best way that you can support my work and this podcast. Go to sfchronicle.com/pod. The other big reason I love this film, this documentary, was that you had a co-star in this movie, and that co-star was our city, Oakland. There's not only there are many scenes of the city and you walking around, but I think that the character of the city comes through. And I was wondering if could you have become the legislator you are without Oakland, which you often describe as, of course, the wokest district.
It is. And Oakland, I love Oakland, first of all. It's a city, a tale of two cities in many respects. We have some enormous wealth here in this city and one of the highest childhood poverty rates in the country. And so for me to have the privilege to represent Wakanda, having been involved with the Black Panther Party as a community worker at Mills College, UC Berkeley, having worked for our great warrior, Ron Dellums, having my church, Allen Temple Baptist Church in East Oakland, which I've been a member of since the 80s. Oakland is a very special place. And I think that all of the challenges that we have here in Oakland, if we can address them here in Oakland, the rest of, we can certainly see the country addressing all of the gaps that must be closed and all of the problems and issues such as poverty, such as income inequality, such as housing, affordable housing, such as healthcare, such as racial justice, criminal justice reform, climate. I mean, Oakland, my district is one of the greenest districts in the country, way before any other community. The Mandela Training Center, teaching young people, many formerly incarcerated, many young men and women of color, how to create solar roofs and put solar panels on buildings.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So Oakland has some of the most progressive ideas. It's most one of the most inclusive cities. But yet we still have so many challenges, like gun violence, like addressing the issues around unsheltered people and equality, you know, and it's a multiracial city where people, even with our differences, try to come together and unify. I know in the African-American community, we are fighting hard to address the anti-Asian hate. As a Black person, I deplore this and leading on a lot of issues on anti-Asian hate. And I don't think you're going to see that in a lot of communities where the AAPI right. community, where the Latino community, where the African-American community, we understand our own, all of our uniquenesses, but we respect each other. And what affects one affects all. But there's struggles around this. You know, there's struggles around
it. Absolutely. And then when you say woke, and you were saying, we say you always introduce yourself as being from the wokest district. Woke is, what do you mean when you say woke? And you know, this has become sort of an epithet on the front in conservative circles, mocking the woke left. What do you mean when you say it? And what do you hear conservatives say when they're saying?
You know, these conservatives are despicable, if you ask me. I used woke at a conference years ago when young people started using it, young African-Americans. And I just said in my speech that, you know, being woke means understanding all the issues each and every day and fighting against injustices each and every day, knowing what we're dealing with, fighting for justice. Actually, if you look in the Webster Dictionary, they picked up that speech and defined woke based on what I said in the speech. You look at the
dictionary. I'm gonna check that out.
And it's, my name is right next to woke, and they quote from that. But it was actually young people, and I was quoting from what young people were talking about, and I was giving a speech. And where was that speech? I think it was in Atlanta, and talking about the fight for justice and equality, and used woke in it, and the Webster Dictionary picked it up and defined it. And that's why I'd say, would the right wing take something that we had talked about in a positive way in terms of being aware of injustices, being woke, so we don't go to sleep,
right.
So we don't let the ones now who are misusing this term take over. And this is exactly what they've done with the term woke. And but that's right. How they operate. That's who they are. And so we have to, I say, be woke, right? That they're going to misuse and misinterpret and tell lies, as we know the Trump administration has done about everything. Look at what they're saying now about January 6th, that this was looked like more of a tourist crowd that came to the Capitol.
Right, right. Yeah.
And so that's how they do you. So I feel very offended when I hear them use the term woke, because it was young people years ago who defined woke, and I used it in a speech, and the dictionary picked it up, and now it's in the Webster Dictionary.
And you are in the Webster Dictionary. So the centerpiece of the film, of course, is your famous vote in 2002, not long after the September 11th attacks. Not to support the authorization of the war in Iraq. Only person in the House to support it. The only person. You received death threats. Your family received death threats. And then the movie, they do show a scene, again, with your co-star Oakland, at Frank Ogawa Plaza. Thousands of people greeted you. What did that moment give you in terms of strength?
Well, you know, it was actually, there are two authorizations. The one that I voted against, the blank check, that 60 words that was right after the horrific attacks of 9/11. Then Iraq came around in 2002, which used the 2001 as the basis for 2002. So the 2001 authorization was really the right vote, because it was 60 words and it really gave any president the authority to go to war forever.
And it's been used 41 times since, 41, 42 times, yeah. I believe, in 19 countries by Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
Even your friend Obama used it.
Yeah, and that was a couple of years ago. We had a declassified report conducted, so it's probably more now. But what happened was, of course, the death threats came. Of course, in Mills College, we housed 60,000 letters, emails, phone calls from people threatening to kill me, calling me a traitor, said I committed an act of treason. But yet there are many who thanked me for that vote. Bishop Tutu, Coretta Scott King, we received communications from people all around the world who said this was the right vote. But what happened was, because of the security issues, I couldn't travel at all. And finally, when they allowed me to travel, and I have to once again acknowledge the Capitol Police, because they were just phenomenal. They saved my life in a lot of instances and continue to do so. So when I was allowed to travel, we came back to Oakland and went to Mills College first. And that's where students, as I walked in, they started saying, "Barbara Lee speaks for me." And that was at Mills. And that was the first weekend I was allowed to travel. And then the next day, there was this big rally that Alice Walker and Danny Glover and Gus Newport and so many phenomenal progressive individuals had put together with all these organizations. And the security, my detail, they didn't really want me to go because there were like 3,000 people. It was a cloudy, gloomy day. And they thought I should just send a message and not attend because they were concerned. And something told me at the last minute, nah, I think I want to go down. So I didn't go for the beginning of it, but I got there right toward the end, and they were pretty, the security was pretty unhappy about that, to say the least. But I was so glad I attended, because when I looked out and saw all of the people there, intergenerational, multiracial, and was with Alice and Danny and Gus and people who were my allies in the struggle, I felt like, okay, I'm not alone in this. Okay, my district, because for a few days, my district wasn't quite clear on why I would vote no, I guess. Remember, everyone was in mourning, grieving, and this was a terrible attack. People were killed.
And you're a young legislator at that point, or to actually say you're only in Congress a few years, 3 or 4 years at that point. So this is someone who's really taking a chance with this vote politically.
But you know, I didn't think of it that way. People warned me, but I didn't think of it that way. And I, of course, been in the California legislature. I mean, I've been through some hard issues, challenges, but I really didn't think about it like that. I thought about it from probably a couple of perspectives. First of all, how it was unconstitutional to give away Congress's requirement to authorize the use of force, knowing that this blank was a blank check and it was so broad that any president would be able to use it. So that was the constitutional issue that I had with this. And I talked to many constitutional lawyers who said, yep, you're right. And then, of course, I'm a person of faith. And it's like my moral compass was saying, yeah, you know, violence begets violence. You know, you've got to really understand, and I'm not a pacifist. My dad was 25 years in the military. And I believe, so it's not like I just think terrorists can get away with anything. I don't. I mean, I think we have to bring those that harm us to justice, but not give away in 3 days the authority to go to war, not knowing the dangers, the moral obligation we have to make sure that there's no collateral damage, that children aren't killed, that civilians aren't killed, and how are we going to make sure that we're on the right track in terms of who gets killed and how this is going to hurt. And when you look at the refugees and the number of people in Afghanistan who were killed, and you know, so all of the unintended consequences is a moral issue for me. It's an ethical issue. And you don't pull the trigger to go to war unless you understand and try to mitigate against all of the issues that could be immoral and wrong. And so I was dealing with my conscience around that and my faith, as well as my understanding of the Constitution and what's required by me as a representative who the people elect to uphold the Constitution.
Congresswoman Barbara Lee, the documentary is called Barbara Lee, Speaking Truth to Power. It opens in theaters and online August 20th. It's always great to talk to you. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for not big timing us. You know, you've been up and down the red carpet now.
Look, my mother told me I was born Barbara and I'm going to die Barbara, okay? And I love representing the most enlightened and, yes, the wokest district in the country. So thank you again.
Thank you, Congresswoman.
Hi, it's Cecilia Lay from Fifth and Mission again, hopping back here to tell you there's more to this interview, and you can hear it on It's All Political. Barbara Lee talks about the late John Lewis, and she talks about her retirement plans. For more on the documentary, It's All Political has another episode out now where Joe Garofoli interviews Abby Ginsberg, the director of Barbara Lee, Speaking Truth to Power. Be sure to check it out.
I'd like to thank you all for listening and hope that you and your families are safe and healthy. I'd like to thank Congresswoman Lee for being here. And a reminder that our podcast with Abby Ginsberg, the director of her documentary, will be out on Tuesday. I'd like to thank the King, Webby Award-winning producer King Kaufman, for producing today's episode. And of course, we always throw a shout out for our fabulous theme music. That song you are listening to is called Cattle Call, and it was written by Randy Clark and performed by Randy Clark and Crow Song. And remember, whether you're woke or still fast asleep, it's all political.